Thank you very much for this invitation to speak here at your seminar. So what I want to talk about is really a theorem in complex analysis. So you consider a space S consisting of holomorphic maps from some annulus C to S into the disk, where S is proper holomorphic at degree 2. C, or not C, but D minus C, or CF, which you could call VF, is connected. And then if you use Riemann-Hurwitz, you see that there are two critical points and two critical values. You suppose that F is normalized so that the two critical values of F are symmetric and real. Yes, so CF is a subset of D. Somewhere. The critical values. Open connected, yes. If you like. The critical values are plus minus V, theta F. So this goes up manually or automatically or what? Pardon? Please say this again. No, CF is an open, it's an annulus. It will be because the complement is connected and non-empty. This is an outer annulus in the disk. I'll do a drawing for you. So it looks like this. You have the disk. Inside the disk, you have some annulus. CF. You have your map S onto the disk, and in the disk you have minus VF and VF, which are the two critical values, and they have critical pre-images somewhere. Call this CF plus, for the pre-image of VF. And CF minus. So CF plus minus are the pre-images of plus minus VF. And these are small C's, yes. It's just a normalization. I mean, you could put them anywhere, but I wanted to be normalized. So I already have done you some additional information, some the notion of C plus and minus. Another thing you have, since you have that annulus, it has a certain modulus. So we denote by MF as the modulus of the annulus CF. And then finally, there's something, I write it as a norm, though it's not really a norm. So it's the soup, or it's the difference between F and the identity on the circle. So it's the soup of F of C minus C, the C in the circle. So it measures how close F is to the identity on this outer annulus. And then the theorem as well is that if you look at the limit as this norm of F tends to zero of the modulus of MF, then that's infinity. If you look at the limit as this norm goes to zero of CF plus and minus, then that's the same as if you look at the limit of the norm tending to zero of VF, that's the origin, zero. And finally, if you look at the limit as norm of F tends to zero of the ratio of VF minus VF, so the vector from the critical value VF to the other critical value, and divided by the vector from the corresponding critical points, then this limit exists and equals 2. So then you might say, you look at this and say, why is this interesting? So let me give you some motivation for this. Is there a stop somewhere? So the motivation comes from studying quadratic rational maps. I hope this is readable. Can we move it forward or something? Is that better? Probably it's not possible to make it. Okay. So there's a laser here. Yeah. So I want to consider quadratic rational maps which have infinity as a fixed point will multiply lambda, zero as a fixed point will multiply mu. And you can conveniently parameterize them like this, r lambda mu of c, the c times c plus mu divided by 1 plus lambda z. If you look at the preimage of infinity, call that infinity tilde, then it's minus 1 over lambda. And then it's pure algebra to check that if you fix some number lambda 0, and you ask that lambda converge to lambda 0, mu converge to 1 over lambda 0, then r lambda mu converges to the linear map c over lambda 0. So if you think of it as maps, quadratic maps, what's going on is that you are diverging to infinity in the space of quadratic rational maps when you do this. So here is the divergence in the title of my talk. Now, this theorem behind the screen is supposed to convert this divergence into a convergence. So let us see how it goes on. If you fix yourself a number lambda in the unit disk, so you fix the multiplier at infinity to be attracting, then you have a full parameter plane, c minus 1 point, namely 1 over lambda, 1 over minus lambda, of parameters mu, for which you have nice quadratic rational maps. And this parameter plane contains a logistic-like Mandelbrot set. And as a Mandelbrot set always has, it has, if you give yourself an irrational p or q, this Mandelbrot set has a limb, the LPQ limb, indexed with lambda, where lambda is multiplied infinity, characterized by the property that the point zero, the fixed point at the origin, which has multiplier mu, is the alpha fixed point of the Phil and Julia set, and it has combinatorial rotation number p over q. Now the divergence that I was talking about before, if you let lambda and mu converge to the say lambda converges to lambda zero and mu converges to 1 over lambda zero, happens in particular in the case where you consider you have a notion of rays or accesses from the basin of infinity. And then you can ask, like accesses correspond to prime ends, and you can look at the Blaskin model for your basin. And this Blaskin model is a degree 2 covering on the circle. And it's well known that for degree 2 coverings of the circle, they're given a rotation number, there's a unique orbit on the circle which corresponds to this rotation number. And this is exactly how you would define rotation number for alpha in this case. So let me come back. So we had this divergence that you could see purely algebraically from the beginning. So it happens sometimes by force. So you ask, I'll focus on the LPQ limb in M lambda, and now you start deforming M lambda. So you start deform lambda. And what you want to do is you want to let lambda converge to a number lambda zero, which is e to the minus I two p or two pi p or q, and you do it in such a way that it does it through Hall cycles of smaller and smaller radii. And then it turns out that the mu is forced to converge to 1 over lambda zero. I mean, something you can prove. So by imposing this condition that you want to insist on what happens in lambda, in the limb LP, L lambda P or Q. Pardon? Lambda, yeah. Lambda is the root point. And then you take a lambda in the disk, you draw the Hall cycle through lambda with root lambda zero. And then what you're asking is that if your convergence is that the lambdas you should look for are lambdas for which the Hall cycle radius, I've made it rho here, converges to zero. So what I'm saying is that you're not allowed to, say, come tangentially into lambda zero. So it's sort of it's slightly more open condition than asking to converge radially or inside a Brouwer angle. So sometimes this divergence that you could see purely algebraically is actually enforced on you if you look at particular dynamics and you want to see what happens. So you may say, well, it diverges, so who cares? But sometimes you can get interesting things from diverging things if you are able to renormalize them properly. And if you are in the LPQ limb, there's a kind of a renormalization, like you take the Q-th iterate. So now I want to throw some geometry into the situation in order to control this divergence and see if we can extract some control this divergence and see if we can extract some convergence from it. So what I'm doing, I have here the Riemann sphere. I have my attracting fixed point at infinity we multiply lambda. I have the fixed point alpha with a combinatorial rotation number p over q, which is zero here. I have a linearizer. I haven't given it a name, I should perhaps. A linearizer for the attracting fixed point at infinity. And I can, I mean, there's always, if the filled and dual set is connected, there's precisely one critical point in the basin of infinity. I can normalize this linearizer to take the critical point to 1. And then the other critical points for the linearizer will be the inverse orbit under multiplication by lambda of 1. So that's lambda, lambda to the minus 1, lambda to the minus 2, lambda to the minus 3, etc. And now here I've drawn it so that lambda is a cube root of unity, but I mean, what I really have been doing is I've looked at the pre-image of this critical orbit on this set of critical points for the linearizer, lifted it by the exponential, and then I found straight lines that pass through the points of these critical points. And I've done it so that actually there are Q lines, which in total contains all the critical points for the critical values for the linearizer. So in this case, where I've drawn it, it's just straight lines, but in general it would be logarithmic spirals. So the critical values for my linearizer are contained in the green lines. So the green lines determine sectors, which, if you lift it to the exponential, are straight lines, or strips, if you like. The dynamics here is multiplication by lambda, since it was linearizer. If I want a dynamic here which preserves each green line, I should take the q of iterate. So if I take lambda to the power q times that, then it fixes each green line here. I've taken also the lines, colored them red, which are halfway in between the green lines. And then I put them also. And what you see is that since all the critical values of the linearizer are in the green lines, if I have a sector, call it a red sector containing a red line, there are no critical values for the linearizer in this sector, meaning that I have univalent branches of the inverse of phi on a sector like that. And it also means that I have a nice inverse branch of the inverse on each of these red lines, a branch which starts by taking the origin up to infinity. And if I look at the image of the red lines under this inverse branch, I get a figure like this. So I have three curves, or Q curves in general. And precisely because the rotation number was chosen to be P over Q, these Q curves will all come and land at the alpha fixed point. So this is a different way to see the rotation number at alpha. So I have here now Q sectors, and there's one sector, call it V0, which is mapped by degree 2 to 1 to its image, and then all the other sectors are just mapped 1 to 1 from one to the other. So you may ask, what does a pre-image of a sector down here look like? See if I can make these ones fit on top of each other. So I have a red sector here between two green lines. It comes from a red strip. And when I take its pre-image, so there's a univalent pre-image upstairs, which is bounded by two green lines. Since I have critical values for my phi map along the green lines, I should expect to have critical points for the bound the linearizer on the boundary of this red sector. You see the first one here, which is the critical point in the basin of infinity, and then you see iterated pre-images. And you find a sector that goes down to alpha equal to zero like that. And you have another one in here between coming down, and then there's one on the backside, which is, I mean, you can imagine that. So I tried to indicate the dynamics of this, these domains between this sort of, I call it the principal red star going from infinity to alpha. And I'm taking the domain V0, which is the one that contains the critical, both critical points. And I've marked the two boundary arcs, the two red arcs. I call one of them kappa 0 and the other one kappa q minus 1, since this is actually the natural ordering they have around infinity. And then if you go back and see what happened here, that you had a dynamics on a multiplication by lambda to the power q, for which the sector is invariant, since the boundaries are invariant, the sector is also invariant. It comes from a translation on a strip, which is invariant here. It means that the cube iterate of the map preserves this sector. And it stabilizes the red arc here. And then you can look, just by taking the hyperbolic metric here, and it's a translation, I mean, you can calculate how far are points translated on this red arc, and the same is the translation length on the red arc up here. And this gives you estimates to call AJ the sector which was bounded by green around kappa J. If you take the hyperbolic metric in this sector and look at the distance between Z and the cube iterate of Z, then it's some number which only depends on lambda and P over Q, and you can do the calculation. It turns out, well, it's the modulus of the cylinder, which is the quotient of the dynamics on this strip. And you can do a computation which shows you that it's Q squared times R of lambda PQ, where R of lambda PQ is again a horocycle radius. So if you take your L, which was the translation coming from the dynamics in the strip, then in that L there's a value of the logarithm of lambda. If you plot that value, logarithm of lambda, and then you consider the horodisk, which is rooted at minus I 2 pi P over Q and passing through log lambda, then it has a certain radius, and you call that R lambda P over Q. Then this translation length is related to R lambda P over Q in this way, that it's the translation length is simply Q squared times the horocycle radius. Now the horocycle radius for the logarithm, if the horocycle radius is very small, it's almost the same as the horocycle radius in the disk for the lambda relative to lambda zero, since the exponential map has derivative of norm one on the unit circle. So you can think that essentially this R is the horocycle radius of the horocycle passing through lambda and the root lambda zero. So we have a picture like this. We have this, the principal star, and it has, the principal star has a pre-image leaving off at the pre-image of infinity and ending together at the pre-image of alpha. I've drawn also a circle here, which is a circle passing through the two critical points of my quadratic vessel map. And it turns out that my quadratic vessel map is univalent inside this disk, and it's also univalent on the outside. What you want to do is you want to do an affine rescaling of R lambda mu. And you can do it in such a way that you send the pre-image of infinity to the origin. So now infinity tilde, I'm not going to change names, is the origin. The fixed point alpha, which used to be zero, is now close to infinity. It's still connected by these free arcs or Q arcs in general. So you have something like this. So up here, you could think that it's like one of these beach balls that you have, except that a beach ball has round disks around the north and the south pole here. The pieces are meeting top and bottom. And what you've done here is you sort of squeezed this beach ball so that one of these things have sort of covered all of the ball, and all the other ones are squeezed down and are now close to infinity. And this one V0 contained a pre-image of the big one, and it's downstairs here. And if you look at the algebra, it turns out that you get a map which has the form 1 over lambda times C plus 1 over C plus A. And A depends on lambda and mu, of course. Now you have a disk, a huge disk, which is the sphere minus this butterfly up here. That is V0, that's what came out to be V0. It's now all of the sphere minus this butterfly. You also have an annulus, which you maybe see clearly upstairs also. The annulus in between the two red sets here. That has become a very large annulus in this drawing. So it's an annulus between the upper butterfly and the lower butterfly. And if you look at the cube iterate of your map, it actually takes this annulus, call it C lambda nu PQ, by degree 2 to 1, onto the disk V0. And we had estimates from before, which said that in a certain hyperbolic metric, this map was close to the identity on the boundaries here. And this is where we come back to where I started with studying maps, which are mapped from a disk, from an annulus to a disk, which are degree 2 branch covers, and which has certain properties. So let me return to the main statement. Well, before I do that, let me see. What is really interesting in the dynamical case is this. So we had this round annulus in between the two butterflies, which was C lambda mu. You want to prove that this modulus tends to infinity. You want to prove that the difference between the critical values, that is the image of plus and minus 1, which are the new critical points, for the cube iterate of the map, converges to 4, when the horizontal radius R lambda P or Q tends to 0. Then it easily follows that any possible limit map of the cube iterate for a map in L lambda PQ is a map of the form C plus 1 over C plus some constant A. And if you want to know more about what it is, then you have to introduce some extra stuff, and I don't want to talk about that today. But, you can introduce some puzzles, parabolic puzzles, and you can control them very well, and it turns out you can completely control the convergence that you have. Towards the proof of this theorem, But let's start by finding some special maps in F. So for m larger than 0, you could define am to be the annulus set of phi such that e to the minus m times 2 pi is less than norm of phi is less than 1. Looks like this. You want a map which has critical values, call it Vm and minus Vm. So what you do is you connect these two, and you ask for a branch covering. Well, first of all, you would ask for just what is this? Sort of an extremal map from quasi-conformal mappings. You want to find take the annulus here, which has half the modulus, and you want a map which has critical points at say chi m equal to e to the minus m pi and minus chi m. And which takes this annulus univalently onto the outer annulus that you have here in such a way that chi m is mapped to Vm and minus chi m is mapped to minus Vm, and then you just do the standard Schwarz reflection and you obtain a map Gm, which is a branch covering from a standard annulus to the disk branched above Vm and minus Vm. Shukovsky. THU. Ah. It's actually an interesting map with some interesting properties. Now, if you have that, if you have another one, well, first of all, you can notice that Vm depends, of course, continuously on m, and Vm tends to 1 when m tends to 0, and it tends to 0 when m tends to infinity. So if I give an arbitrary f, with some critical points, then I can find an m such that it has the same, I have the critical values somewhere, and I can find an m such that Vm is the same as Vf. I mean, I start with Vf, which are the critical values, minus Vf and Vf, then I can adjust m so I get the same, and I have actually a lift. If this is f, then I get a lift, call it psi f, of gm to f, which is univalent and which shows you that vf is actually, or m is equal to mf. So I have here that gm is equal to f composed of psi f. So that's one thing you want to use. Another thing you want to use is that these maps, since they are map the unit circle to the unit circle, they extend by Schwarz reflection. So each f and psi extends by Schwarz reflection in S1 to maps also called phi and psi, f from and I even call it tilde, meaning that's the reflection of C, C units reflection unit circle into C bar, and you have psi f from AMF tilde to CF tilde. I want to define also for 0 less than rho less than 1, you want to define k f rho to be the closure of psi of the annulus a rho m f 2 pi. You do this for rho larger than 0, and then you can define k f 0 to be just the unit circle. So I'm taking a fraction rho of this annulus, maybe it's here, and then I'm taking the corresponding fraction here, and then sort of key lemma says that all f in f, if you take the norm or the supremum norm of f of z, divided like this, supremum over C in K F rho, so for all 0 less than rho less than 1. If you look at the difference between F of Z, take the supremum over K F rho, then this is bounded by 2 to the power rho times the norm of F to the power 1 minus rho. This is sort of a nice estimate because it doesn't depend on the modulus. The proof is also sort of nice and simple. If you have here your disk, you have well, you have the standard annulus, and then you have your deformed annulus CF. F into D, then you have a covering, I mean it's e to the I z from a strip of height m times 2 pi. So yeah, I m 2 pi. The real line. So we want to pick a point here on the line at height rho m 2 pi, and you want to prove that the modulus of, or the norm of f of z minus z is bounded by that number over there, which is defined in terms of rho. One natural thing to do is to say, well, if I look at the harmonic measure of the real line viewed from this point inside this disk or this strip, so call this omega r z0 fm, then this is simply 1 minus rho, which you see from the fact that the function x plus iy maps to 1 minus y over m times 2 pi. This harmonic takes the value 1 on the real axis and takes the value 0 on the upper boundary. It takes exactly the value 1 minus rho at on this line here. Now on R, we have that F of psi of e to the I z minus psi of e to the I z. It's less than the norm of F. I mean, I'm just evaluating F of z minus z on the circle, and globally, because my map takes the annulus into the disk, so z and f of z are both in the disk. I mean, globally, I know that this number f of psi of z I z minus psi of e I z is always less than or equal to 2. Now I apply a theorem for which I don't know the name, but sort of a standard theorem in complex analysis, which says that if you have some function, say h, from the disk to C, holomorphic and bounded, then if you look at the modulus of h at the origin, then it's bounded by the exponential of 1 over 2 pi, the integral along the unit circle of h star e to the I theta d theta. I should say what this number is. So you define h theta, or a star of e I theta, to be the limit as r tending to 1 from below of h r e to the I theta.
You need a log?
I need a log, thank you. Otherwise it's not going to work here. Okay. Yeah. Now, the harmonic measure doesn't really see if we're in the disk or whatever, so we can just pretend that the strip is a disk and do the calculation, and then you end up with this formula that you have up here. Okay. So I didn't know that one, but that's a good reference then. So. Yeah, from the Lemana, okay. Let me see. So essentially what you had to worry about when you want to prove this is that you could imagine that the modulus could become small even though your map is close to the identity on the boundary. So somehow you need to ensure that you cannot have this situation to occur. And one way to do this is to define a quantity called delta F. And it should be the maximum of MF and the norm of F for F net. And then there's a proposition which says that the infimum over F in F of delta F is some number delta 0 which is strictly positive. So always either the modulus is larger than delta 0 or the norm is larger than delta 0. So this sort of kills this worry that you could have that the modulus was small and the map is close to the identity. So how much time do I have? Pardon?
5 minutes.
5 minutes? Okay. So I was just wondering if I should just leave you to this or... Pardon? Yes, this is from this then you start working on... But yeah, okay. I can give you an idea, yes. So one thing you will notice is that, again, let's do the drawing. So you have the critical values for the map GM. And then we have the critical values for F. So here I have F. Here I have psi f, and perhaps I want to give this a different color. Now this, the image of this core geodesic is of course a core geodesic here, passing through the two critical points, C plus and minus, Cf minus and Cf plus. Now, if you take the reflected annulus, let me draw it here, then of the full annulus between these two, I have one quarter of the modulus here, one quarter here, one quarter and one quarter. So it means that if I look at the hyperbolic distance in the big annulus, in AM tilde, I look at the hyperbolic distance in AM tilde between a point, say, Z in the circle of center 0 and radius e to the minus m pi. So that's the green circle. So you take a green z. And you look at its distance to the unit circle. It's some number which doesn't depend on the modulus. It's something you compute. It's log of 1 plus square root of 2. It's a constant. So it means that if you do the same here, you take the reflected circle, or the large annulus, and you look at the distance between points z on psi of this green circle. Then this is also the distance in here between z and the unit circle. So any of these points are at this distance from the unit circle in the large circle, in the large annulus, which is CF union its reflection. On the other hand, you also know something. You know that you have the origin here. So you know that you have on this circle, or this, you have two pre-images of the origin. And you know where they are here. They're exactly I chi m and minus I chi m. So you know how far they are apart in the hyperbolic distance on the small circle. So you know that the hyperbolic distance in say A or CF between these two points, which are the preimage of zero, call them z plus and z minus. So the hyperbolic distance in CF between z plus and z minus, well, that's pi divided by m. That's the length of this equator. And since it's only halfway, so it's divided by 2. Also know something. I know that, well, these are pre-images of zero. So I know something about the norm of this. I mean, this is f of z plus minus minus z plus minus. This is this then, and then I can use this Adamard free circle theorem to say that this less then square root of twice the norm of f. So it means that if my norm of f is small, then the two preimages of zero are close to the origin. Next, I could look at set B, which is the disk, minus CF. So this is the B. I want to prove that this B, first of all, is close to the origin, and also is close to the unit circle. So it follows that it has a large diameter. I mean, if it's not close to the unit circle, then my modulus is big. And if it's not close to the origin, and my points z plus and minus are close to the origin, then they are sort of close to each other. But I mean, if M is small, they're supposed to be far from each other. So this implies that entropy of B is small. And MF small implies so plus and MF small implies that supremum B is close to 1 Now, if I had maps with arbitrary small delta F, what would happen? I'll have a situation which doesn't look like that at all. It looks more like this. My complement B stretches almost all the way up to the unit circle. It stretches almost into the origin, and my points at plus and at minus are close to each other. Here close to. So they're in particular close to the boundary of this domain. If you're close to the boundary, then you're also far away from the other boundary. I mean, if you are close to some boundary component, then going into the sort of the guts of the annulus, it takes you a far distance. But our initial estimate said that, well, it was never further away than logarithm of 1 plus square root of 2. So on the one hand, it cannot be too far from the unit circle. On the other hand, it's forced to be very far from the unit circle if delta F is small. So A tilde is a round annulus, yes. So AM is the inner annulus, and A tilde is the one which is AM, union is reflection, union is the unit circle. And I mean, now if you want to prove the theorem, it essentially you proved here that this limit at least cannot be less than delta 0. And then you fiddle a little bit, do some convergence estimation, see that it cannot be finite either. It has to be infinite. And then once you have that and you combine with this fact, you get this using this Hadamard-Free disk theorem. And finally, this one, it holds for the maps DMs. I mean, this is the sort of the basic estimate that you have in quasi-conformal maps, that if you look at the disk and you look at the annulus which surrounds a little segment and you look at the modulus estimates you can do, then that exactly yields this, since the extremal map is the map TM. So when M tends to infinity, you have that. And then essentially, the difference between a DM and an F is the map psi, which is univalent on a very very fat annulus. And you just check that, well, it cannot distort this. So that's it.